T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Want to put your baseball skills to the test? Then get ready to show your stuff with MLB Pitch, Hit, and Run. The official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Sign up for free for a chance to play your way to the Pitch, Hit, and Run finals at the 2024 World Series. Visit pitchhitrun.com today.
From the Kia Studios in Midtown Atlanta, Willie P is in the building on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Will Polonchuk here with you. Hope you're enjoying yourself on this Friday evening. We give our best wishes out to John Chuckery, who is dealing with the ill effects of kidney stones tonight. Know that he tried to play hurt earlier this week. Could not get it done, unfortunately. So we send our best wishes out to Chuck. Hopefully he's back here in short order with those. 404-741-0929 is how you get in touch with us. Your two-way sports talk telephone number and also the Solomon Brothers Diamond text line. You can tweet me at Willie P. Style. That's IEP Style. And, of course, you can tweet the radio station at 929 The Game as well. A lot going on. Talked a lot about the NFL Players Association and the consternation back and forth between them and the owners about the 17-game schedule, the additional playoff game, the capped money that is being basically held against them as some sort of leverage, and the increase as well of the players' percentage that comes to them as a result of the new proposed CBA when it comes to the National Football League and what they might want to have come about when it starts here possibly next year. They believe, the owners do, that they have a fair deal on the table, but as we always know in these particular situations, it's about who's telling the better story and who's giving the better message. The owners believe that their message is better. The players feel like they're getting screwed. They always kind of do, and I tend to identify more with them than I do with the owners. And it'll be interesting to see how this has spun over the course of the next couple of days after the PA basically said, not only are we not in favor of this, but we're not even going to take a vote among the 30 representatives that didn't even make it past the senior committee. They're hoping to get themselves back to the bargaining table within the next couple of days with the NFL and its owners. Braves start spring training on Saturday afternoon, 1 o'clock, at a brand-new park in Northport, Florida, on the Gulf Coast side of the state. Very interesting to look at this and say that we might get some immediate answers to a lot of the biggest questions that surround the Atlanta Braves. Mainly, which of these guys who are amongst the highly touted at the AAA level, at what I call the quad A level, and even the ones who take up space on the major league roster but might not necessarily belong there, where will those pieces emerge over the next 6 weeks? Which of those pieces will emerge and become next-level players? Who has taken the most steps during this offseason? Is it a guy like a Johan Camargo? Can he prove the worth of the faith that Alex Anthopoulos and the rest of the brain trust inside the Atlanta front office have in him and or Austin Riley? Because that's one of the biggest questions surrounding the Braves this season. Did they do enough to solidify their rotation? Of course, Cole Hamels, the one major addition to that rotation, won't be available at the start of the regular season for them. We seem to think it might be May before we even see him throwing, just based off of supposition and whether or not he'll be able to get himself acclimated to big league stuff and big league work after the reevaluation period when it comes to his injured shoulder. The other part of this that I find also very interesting is that a lot of this kind of also harpers on the fact that you believe that the 97 wins you got from the Braves this past season is still attainable based on the relative play alongside the rest of this division. Because if you look at me, I think Philadelphia got better. I think the Mets got better. I think the Nationals won the damn World Series. Yeah, they lost Rendon, but it's not as if they're a slouch. Yes, the Braves owned them during the regular season last year. Completely understand that. But when you think about the moves they made in the offseason, do you think that those put them head and shoulder over the defending champions where they sit right now? Love the bullpen, but where in essence are you better? The Atlanta Hawks last night, a fantastic victory over the Miami Heat. Trae Young with his first 50-point game as a pro. And the other part of this that I think is very, very key to think about when you look at the way that last night played out was that Cam Reddish and DeAndre Hunter, Kevin Huerter, and John Collins were all on the floor and had very key moments to spur the Hawks down the stretch. Huerter hit a big shot in a key possession. DeAndre Hunter had the 1 3-pointer that tied it. And, of course, the steal and score by Cam Reddish that gave them the lead they wouldn't relinquish late in the game. I think all point as central moments of great confidence, in addition, of course, to the 50 points garnered by Trey. And the other part of this, too, is that the other exciting thing, I think, for Atlanta is that they're not even whole yet. You still don't have Clint Capella and Scalabissiere as part of what is going about here. So I think once those guys become integrated into this team, you might even see the level of play jump another bit. We had Mike Conte on earlier in the program. If you missed it, you can also use the Rewind app on the radio.com app and also find it at 929thegame.com. And he said that, you know, right now, without seeing Capella and Labissiere, you believe the Hawks might be a player or two still away from becoming a contender in 2020, 2021. It might have to come via trade, depending on where you sit and what you get in the lottery. The other part of this that I think is also very interesting is that you're now seeing Lloyd Pierce's real value as a developmental coach when it comes to getting the most out of his players. You're getting a level of play out of Cam Reddish you did not see at Duke consistently enough. And you would have thought that as a player, there would have been no one person on this earth who could have motivated him more than Coach K. But for some reason, whether it's the added pressure, help he's gotten from Lloyd Pierce, or just the simple fact that, hey, man, this is my job now, and I have to kind of, you know, figure out what I know and what I don't know and fix what I don't know and turn it into things that I do know. Whatever's happened, we're not complaining about Cam Reddish anymore. He is not the pariah he was through the first 25 to 30 games of this season. Of course, Atlanta United on the precipice Tuesday night of something cool, opportunity to advance in the CONCACAF Champions League. It should be a fun atmosphere Tuesday night in Kennesaw. I bought tickets for it. I'm going out there. Buddy of mine from my time in South Carolina, also a big Atlanta United fan. We're going to go out there tomorrow on Tuesday night. It's going to be cold. It's going to be rainy, but we're going to have a lot of fun with it. And I also think that this is an opportunity for United to once again prove that it can be on the same level of its contemporaries elsewhere in not only Western Hemisphere soccer, but in North and Central America. Because if you get this victory, you're going to get another chance with Club America, which, to me, I think is going to create a very tantalizing atmosphere, because not only do you get to go play at Estadio Azteca, but you also get another opportunity to fill Mercedes-Benz in a game where you might have to open up the top deck. Now, the one thing you do see with European sides is a lot of times you have divided priorities. You have a lot of fans who would rather see you compete for UEFA Champions League titles rather than Premier League titles, and vice versa. Some who think that the Champions League or the Europa League or the FA Cup, things of that nature, League Cup, because they've got like four or five different ancillary tournaments they play for over there in Britain. We only have, you know, this one and the U.S. Open Cup, which, again, Atlanta United proved over last season that they took it seriously. Yeah, they might not have played some of their key stars in U.S. Open Cup play, but it opened the door for guys like a Jeff Lorenowitz to answer the bell. Emerson Hyman was good in those games, too, last year for them. And this is a real interesting situation for them to kind of find themselves, because I believe the two sides that they're playing right now, Motagua and possibly Club America if they advance, are as good, if not better, than any sides they'll see in MLS play. And we've already seen during preseason play, they seem to be head and shoulders ahead of their MLS competitors. Their MLS preseason games were dominating. Not to say that they're, you know, going to get themselves to a level beyond where they were last year automatically based on preseason matches that, you know, we can't really see. But there was a lot of angst in the United fan base to begin the season. And I think we maybe need to give more credit to Darren Eales and Carlos Bocanegra for having to, within the parameters of this league, rebuild this roster after a lot of guys decided they'd rather be elsewhere for reasons that are beyond the control of the technical staff. What's to be really appreciated is that it seems like this particular brain trust with United finally has the players that they feel that they need in order to be a consistent competitor in the MLS, and not just in MLS, but on the world stage as well. You might see that play out here over the course of the next couple of weeks. Willie P is in the building, 404-741-0929 is how you get in touch with us, at 929TheGame on Twitter, at Willie P Style. And here's the other part of this. We've been talking a lot about certain food items. Which food item in your hate list that you hate the most has the most crazy defenders of that particular food item? Like, if you don't care for that item, the people who are the truthers of that item will eviscerate you. Mine is tequila. Ken's is avocados. Caleb Johnson, our update guy, is he for some reason doesn't like cinnamon rolls, which has all of us very, very confused. What is yours? On the text line, 404-741-0929, or also on Twitter, at 929TheGame. We'll come back. Corey Chavis, who does a lot of draft work now, has some thoughts about where the Falcons might go at 16. He joined the Midday Show with Andy and Randy. We'll play that for you next. Willie P in the building. Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Willie P is in the house on a Friday night that will turn into a Saturday morning. In for John Chucker in the night show, Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. A texter from the 770 says, "Hi, Willie P. I'm 66, no wings or mac and cheese." Two people in a row said mac and cheese. I don't understand you people who don't like. We're asking you which food that you do not like has the most staunch defenders of it, the people who will basically eviscerate you if you do not like them. I know I keep saying the word staunch and eviscerate. I understand that takes me, puts me in a certain level. The craziest defenders and those who will just attack you mercilessly. Pineapple on pizza, I don't think that's a real popular pick. This from the 404. It's the worst, absolutely. But I don't think that there are people out there who vigorously defend pineapple on pizza. I think we find them all to be somewhat Californian and hippie, if you will. This guy goes watermelon. Watermelon? Doesn't like watermelon? I didn't realize that you could hate watermelon. Like it's a pretty non-threatening fruit. This guy is all about it. He's got ranch dressing, salad, fries, pizza, spaghetti. I don't get it. Ren. I don't know if he's saying this or if he's just reacting to all the ones that have been said. Although no one said salad or fries, but Ren says he doesn't like ranch, salad, fries, pizza, or spaghetti. Weird. Keep them coming at Willie P Style at 929 the game as well. Also, we might have to get into this little sitcom thing that this little beef I have here with our man Andy Bunker. He is very anti the show Boy Meets World because he finds it to be somewhat unrealistic because Corey basically allowed Topanga to give up Yale even though he encouraged her to go to Yale in order to follow him to that shanty no-name school that they ended up going to, Pembroke. But again, that might be a discussion for later on in the program. Speaking of our man Bunky Pants, he and Randy McMichael had a chance to talk to Randy, one of his former teammates, Corey Chavis, who now does NFL draft coverage, and he joined them on the midday show with Andy and Randy earlier today, and they asked Corey about his favorite edge rushers for the Falcons at pick number 16 of the first round.
Well, from an edge rusher perspective, I guess you could always start with the top and talk about Young, but, you know, obviously he wouldn't probably be right. Available, you know, where you're picking at. So I think some of the other guys that are impressive, and maybe some of these guys are players that may be in the later rounds. I really like A.J. Epinesa from Iowa. Now, he'll be probably a first-round pick. I think he's a guy that's advanced in terms of, you know, hand usage, and, you know, he's pretty much lived up to the hype after being a pretty high recruit coming out of high school. I think he lived up to the billing in Iowa, and he had a very good final performance of his career working against Austin Jackson from USC, and I think he'll be a pretty high draft pick as well. I also think that Curtis Weaver out of Boise State, not necessarily a spectacular fast twitch guy, but he's also a good technician, along with Bradley and Nye out of Utah, Kenny Willekes out of Michigan State. A guy who I think possibly could fit Atlanta, though, is Yetur Gross-Matos out of Penn State. I think he's got quite a bit of upside, and I still think his best football is ahead of him.
And Corey, we for the last however Dan's been here, we've all note okay. The Falcons need this. They had the historic defensive line draft last year. Falcons need D line. Have didn't draft anybody. A guy who maybe fall to them. A guy who kind of reminds me a lot of Vic Beasley is Chaseon, the kid out of LSU. What about him as a fit for what the Falcons want to do as far as those smaller, fast defensive linemen?
Yeah, you know, I think I actually went to go see him play in the SEC championship game, and I was very impressed for a guy that doesn't have a lot of numbers and had the injury back in 2018, Randy. I thought he was very good in terms of being able to bend the flexibility. They use him in coverage. I thought he does a pretty good job of setting up his roll move once he gets the tackle up the field. I really wanted to see how he would hold up in the run game, going against a tackle like Andrew Thomas on the edge, and also Isaiah Wilson, who's 340 pounds. I thought he was at least satisfactory in that game, and really that's probably the big thing you want to see from him is to be able to do some of those things if you're going to stand him up in a two-point stance off the edge. I think he's a versatile player that you can move around as kind of a chess piece, and I think he's probably a little bit longer than people may expect. I guess we'll see when you have the measurements at the combine.
Joining us here on the Midday Show with Andy and Randy, NFL draft analyst Corey Chavis, getting us ready for the combine and also just talking about some of the guys that we've seen mocked to the Falcons in a lot of these mock drafts that are coming out. And Corey, I mean, you've probably seen it too. You mentioned both of their names, both Epinesa and Gross-Matos are names that at number 16 we've seen time and time again connected to the Falcons. You said Gross-Matos might be a better fit. What is it about him that you think fits better with the Falcons than maybe Epinesa or some of these other guys?
Well, I think the thing that he does a really good job of is he's what I call a second-phase pass rusher. And Randy probably went against a lot of these guys during his career where they don't necessarily win right away, but they are able to keep you off of them in terms of they have enough length to be able to kind of put you in the mind frame of a Chandler Jones. If the down progresses, in that second phase of the down, they often win. They're slippery. And I think he actually, I've seen him in practice. I've gone to visit them in practice before. And I thought when you watch him on the bags and how heavy his hands are, those things are impressive And I think he bends pretty well. Now, he does need to play, I think, consistently a little bit more forceful against the run. He can do it because there are very few tight ends who can block him. But I think that he can open up some things in terms of being able to stand up or put his hand in the dirt. And also, just as to kind of give you an idea of like how they viewed him at Penn State, they will put him at the three technique sometimes on third down to rush from the inside as well.
And Corey, the Falcons, they're in a situation where they're going to make some offseason decisions at the running back and tight end position. If they do move on from Devonta Freeman, Austin Hooper, guys like that, there's some guys, maybe second, third round running back, tight end, that you think can come in and help this team right away?
Yeah, I mean, I tell you what, I mean, and from a tight end perspective, one of the guys I've been really has grown on me is the kid Adam Trautman out of Dayton. I think his movement skills are very good. I think he's going to be a very good player. I'm impressed with his run after the catch, and he's also has the size. I think at 6'5", I think he weighs in that 250-pound range, but I think he does a really good job of being able to sink his hips. He's getting better as a blocker, but I think you're going to draft a guy like him to be able to kind of stretch the field, and I think he runs well enough to do that. In terms of running back, I think you're going to have a lot of options at that position in the draft, maybe beyond second or third round, or maybe the third round area. I think a good fit for the Falcons would be a guy like Joshua Kelly. He can catch the ball out of the backfield. I think that will work really well with Matt Ryan. He's satisfactory in blitz pickup. You go back to his days earlier in his career before he transferred to UCLA, very good kickoff returner. And the fact that he is a guy that has the vision and the patience and then can stick his foot in the ground with some burst, he's a guy that can get to the edge, but he's also a decent inside runner. He kind of carried the UCLA team when they struggled a year or two back. I thought this season it took him a while to really find his groove, but I thought he was the best back at the Senior Bowl.
And Corey, I was gonna ask you anyway. Some of these guys that before the season, you know, you have a mock draft and all. You had guys that were top five, top ten players. Now you're seeing them drop, like a Grant Delpit, Andrew Thomas from Georgia. They're dropping on boards. Is there a reason why you see Grant Delpit and guys like that dropping?
Well, I think with Delpit, there's a little bit of a question in terms of some of the tackles. You know, there's been some fly-by misses. I think he's a satisfactory tackler. I think maybe sometimes you've got other names, and I think it's cyclical, the draft process. If he has a great 40, which I think I expect him to have a good workout, and he has a good on-field workout, then his name will move back up. But if you like what you saw from him over the course of his career, I think that the negative would be the angles. I think with Thomas, it's just inconsistency. We talked about the game against Chaisson, but, I mean, let's face it, there's times where he plays a little bit top-heavy. I think he's quick-footed. He doesn't always look the part, even when he does complete his blocks, and I think that's probably why, you know, some teams maybe have soured a little bit. But I feel like, at worst, he's at least a starting right tackle. So probably a little bit of over-analyzation going on with Thomas.
Mm. What about Thomas's teammate, Jake Fromm? We hear a lot of different things about him and where he may go. I know Mel Kiper said if he doesn't show great arm talent at the combine or in a workout, he might fall to the fourth or fifth round. Where are you at with Jake Fromm's analysis right now?
Well, I think the combine will do absolutely nothing for me with Jake Fromm because it's not going to show the fact that, you know, he scans the field. He can go to second, third, and fourth targets. The thing that I wanted to see, and maybe the combine can show this, is more of a transfer to me on the outside, the number throws. I mean, there was too many occasions where he really just plays the position a little bit too upright. And you've got some passers, you know, that have had to develop that trait. But, I mean, just think about Marcus Mariota and how that's never really translated for him in terms of involving or connecting the lower body. And that's why he throws so many of the makeable passes and doesn't really attack defense. And so that's kind of what you see. But from an instinctive standpoint, he's light years ahead of where Mariota would have even been coming out of school. And I think about one play this year. It was actually a play that was dropped in the back of the end zone against Notre Dame where he's rolling to his right and he throws a ball 40 yards on a dime to the back of the end zone. And you watch some of the throws in the 2000 and 18 SEC championship game. I think he throws the ball well enough, no doubt.
Hey, Corey, we appreciate it. Great stuff.
Appreciate it, fam.
No doubt, man. I really appreciate y'all having me on, man, and have a great draft. The Falcons ended the season a lot better than they started it, so I expect a better 2020.
We hope the same thing, Corey.
Thanks, buddy.
Corey Chavis there, former teammate of Randy's, now doing some draft analysis. DraftNastyMagazine.com.
That was a little bit from the Midday Show with Andy and Randy. Willie P. back here with you on the night show, Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. There's one particular word or term that's been in the sports news over the course of the last couple of days. When is it okay? When is it not okay? And why has it come to the forefront over the course of the last couple of months? That particular word I will reveal, and we'll try to analyze it next on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. If there's one particular item that people on our social media platforms have said that they don't like, that they feel has a lot of very visceral defenders, I believe that the one consensus would be mayonnaise. There's a lot of there's a very high anti-mayo contingent in our group that apparently does not like mayonnaise and feel afraid to share it. I think we all need to have a group. All of us get together. It's not that I don't like mayonnaise. It's just I don't see the value of it. Like, it doesn't do anything for me. I'm not this person who will, like, not eat a sandwich if it has mayonnaise on it. I'm not. That's why my answer was tequila. And, oh, by the way, to the guy who said, I don't know why you're including tequila because tequila is not a food. You said food. And then, of course, it has me looking up on Google, is a drink a food? And now it comes into, you know, all this stuff. Is a hot dog a sandwich? Is this and that? That got me down that rabbit hole now. So thank you to the person who bemoaned me. I think Justin was the one who bemoaned me for saying, in this discussion, how is tequila an answer? Not hating and just saying it's a drink, not a food. I think I'm going to table the discussion of the 90s sitcoms and do this with the 90s sitcoms till tomorrow. Because, again, my man Andy Bunker has some real just off-base thoughts about the show Boy Meets World. And that could get a little nasty. A lot of discussion going on about that tonight. We've had some good sports discussion, too. And I want to start out our next discussion by playing you what Big Poppy had to say about former Houston Astros pitcher Mike Fiers.
Oh, after you make your money, after you get your ring, you decide to talk about it? Why don't you talk about it during the season when it was going on? Why you didn't say, I don't want to be no part of? Oh, now. Nah. So you look like a snitch. You know what I mean?
Why is it that people inside baseball continue going down the path of, quote, hating on a snitch? Like why is that the point of contention for people? The point of contention that I don't like is that, again, nothing about what Poppy said before the word snitch was incorrect, because there is a little bit of two-facedness from Fiers by him saying, I'm going to be on this team, take advantage of the spoils of it, and then when I leave, start singing like Canary. There is some level of cowardice to that. Having said that, without his particular testimony, the ball doesn't get rolling. So while I'm not going to laud Mike Fiers as a hero, I think calling him a snitch is also logically inconsistent. Because at the same time, we have to understand what this is in the realm of sports history. This is basically like match fixing, in a way. That'd be the cross-sport equivalent. This is like match fixing, point shaving. It's as bad as any of those things that you could possibly think of. People try to compare it to what SMU did in the 80s. No. This is legitimately altering the field of play and allowing an inherent advantage that they gained illegally to not only determine the outcome of a game, but also win a World Series. So my question to you is, are we okay with snitches or are we not? Are you a fan okay with the snitches or not? There was somebody on Twitter, I believe it was Mina Kimes, who I believe she said something to the effect where she was comparing Dak Prescott and Ezekiel Elliott, and someone tagged Ezekiel Elliott in a post criticizing Mina, and she said, quote, stop snitch tagging. In order to try and, you know, because the person tagged Ezekiel Elliott in there and they were trying to alert Ezekiel Elliott about some shade that Mina threw on Zeke, comparing him to Dak Prescott. Look, man, I'm not gonna sit here and try to tell you that you're right to be okay or not okay with him snitching, but like that's not the issue with me. The issue with me was he waited until they won the World Series. It's not that he sung. It's when. And so I think that's what Poppy was trying to say. But I also don't think you make yourself or you don't make the baseball public look any good by calling him a quote-unquote snitch or a rat or whatever the heck the word you want to use. Because my whole deal is this, is that I personally believe that baseball's culture allowed this to really occur. And that part of it is not a good thing, is that it basically took away any opportunity for a, and I'll use a different word, a whistleblower to allow justice to be served for this group that I believe still has not gotten the appropriate punishment that I believe is due and deserved to them. So because of it, I have my issues with Poppy said at that point. And because of that, I think we need to get to a point where we're not using the word snitch to refer to Mike Fiers. 404-741-0929. George is in Lawrenceville. And George, you're on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. How are you, pal?
I'm doing all right, man. You know, it's very interesting that you're talking about this because I had the same reaction when I saw the post with Big Poppy. Now, listen, I like Big Poppy personally. You know, I love what he did on the field. I hate the Yankees, so, you know, I love what he did to him in the later stage of his career. But his attitude reflects two things. One, he's an admitted cheater. He got caught for steroids.
Truth.
Right? Fact of the matter is, if he came down too hard on them, he knows that a lot of people would come back on him. But secondly, he's part of a larger anti-snitch fascination with mafia and La Cosa Nostra and gang culture in the United States, okay? We tend to vilify whistleblowers and snitches. It's why, as an example, good cops never speak up against bad cops, okay? And so, yeah, was he wrong to wait until the World Series? Yeah, but we needed to hear about this. And I do appreciate that there is actually a lot of righteous indignation, which is why, as much as his production is pedestrian, Nick is one of my favorite Braves now because he said it how it needed to be said.
Right.
But Poppy kind of said what he had to say because if he came down too hard, the heat would come right back on him for the steroids. Mm-hmm. The difference is with steroids, the hitter could be taking it and the pitcher could be taking it, negating the advantage. This is just outright cheating, card counting, you know, negating the field of play. And I'm not advocating for it, but I'm not going to be sorry if anybody drills him in the head this year.
Appreciate the call, George. All very valid points. And here's the thing. I was never a big anti-steroid guy. I really wasn't. The way that I kind of looked at it is that I always kind of wanted my athletes, like when I grew up, I wanted people to be as strong and as able to flourish in their position as possible. And if performance-enhancing drugs made that happen, I was fine with it. I know that might sound inconsistent logically for people. It might sound like heresy to others. It certainly is heresy to a lot of people who value Hank Aaron's home run record as the true record. But to me, it would also be logically inconsistent for me to say that I hate steroids as somebody who grew up as a child of the 80s and 90s and didn't absolutely love the power effect that the mid to late 90s and early 2000s had on baseball. I watched Summer of 98 as intently as anybody. It had a lot of people fall in love or refall in love with baseball. I was already in love with baseball, but I tell you what, I was glued to my television set when Mark McGwire hit 62 at Busch Stadium on that nationally televised night. It was one of those type of moments where you remember where you were when you watched it. And if you weren't one of those people who had that type of effect on that, then I think you're lying to yourself if you are somebody who was like, oh, I don't like steroids. But George is correct. This is completely different and much further, and we should not be vilifying the people who were the whistleblowers to make it happen, including Mike Fiers. We'll come back, put a bow on the show. When we return, Willie P. in the house, Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.